My name is Farisa Knox, and this is how I create.
Welcome to This Is How We Create, a show that digs deeper into the creative life of contemporary artists of color. Discover what feeds their creativity and how they've found or are finding their artistic voice. Through these intimate and candid conversations, you'll gain insights into the lives of creative professionals of color that are hard to find anywhere else. Hello, friends. Today, our guest is Farisa Knox, who is a Chicago-based author, producer, and entrepreneur. Farisa is founder and CEO of RLM Media, an integrated marketing and communications advertising agency, and What Are You Wearing Productions. As will become evident through our conversation, Farisa is a visionary creative executive who is passionate about storytelling and who's known to be around Chicago as a tastemaker. Not only does Farisa share the insider journey of creating RLM Media, but she also shares lots of business tips that might get you through some tight spots. In so many ways, this was definitely a mentoring podcast episode for me. Get your notebooks and your pencil, because this one is chock full. I'll see you on the other side. Let's start the show. Welcome back to This Is How We Create. My name is Martine Severin, and I'm so happy to have Farisa Knox in the guest chair today. Welcome,
Thanks,
Farisa.
Martine. So happy to be here.
I am so happy to chat with you. I got acquainted with you through True Chicago, which is an organization here in Chicago that supports emerging artists. And so you gave the keynote at the last conference I attended, and I was just floored and bowled over, and I couldn't wait to DM you to say, you're amazing.
I was equally as impressed by you, honestly. Just any woman being super creative and turning her passion into how she supports herself, and then so inspiring at the same time. I noticed you too. So I was happy when you reached out.
So the audience won't know that I'm about to wink at you. I see you. Farisa, you're so many things. You're a founder, you're a CEO, you're an author, you're a producer. You do so many different things, including being at the helm of RLM Media. I wanted to just start out our conversation by asking about what you were like as a child and what are some of the things you dreamed of becoming? What did you dream for yourself?
I love that question. As a kid, my earliest memory of what I wanted to do and who I thought I was, really, I think I was a teacher. In my mind, that was my first thing. I was like, I'm going to be a teacher. My mom used to babysit kids in our apartment in the Bronx growing up, and I would make them all sit around crisscross applesauce and look at me and teach them. Honestly, God knows what I was trying to teach those little kids back then. And then from there, I remember writing was my first outlet for creativity. It was the first way I really found to express myself. And, you know, all the hard feelings and emotions that you deal with as a kid, and you think you're the only one going through it. And I started writing poems and really sad, you know, Olivia Rodrigo would be very proud of me these days, right? It's like that kind of sit and wallow in your heartbreak as a child, whether it's because of your parents or the first boy that you had a crush on or whatever. After that, I was like, I got introduced to some Black poets like Nikki Giovanni, Maya Angelou. And then I thought, I am going to be a famous poet who writes her poetry, right? And produces these cute little books. Like Nikki Giovanni's books were, I still remember, like the cutest little sizes, like just sizes of books that I had never seen before. And just knowing that she was a Black woman and a professor, I was like, that's where I'm going. And then before I actually got into real work, my last fantasy job was being J-Lo's personal assistant. Honestly, I was like, this is it. I can't think of a better job than following J-Lo around her entire day, her entire month, and helping her run her empire. Then I went to school, and then things started to shift for me in terms of, you know, what I wanted to do.
Did you ever get anywhere near the job of following J-Lo around?
No.
And being
I never
assistant?
Pursued it. So I'm sure what I know about myself today is that if I actually pursued it, I would have gotten very close or gotten the job.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, I think for me,
I wanted to be a writer as well, and maybe I still will one day. And you ended up being a writer. I mean, granted, you didn't write a book of poetry unless I, in the research I did for this.
No, I don't have a book of poetry yet, and I'm not writing that right now. As you know, as a creative, it's never off the table of what we could create.
You did become a writer because you wrote your memoir. So I think that's a conversation for another time. And I should say, everyone, her memoir is called Love, Sex, and Friendship in No Particular Order. So, you know, definitely pick it up. You're known in Chicago for helping businesses get noticed and helping businesses succeed through your work and through RLM Media. Can you tell me how it came about that you decided to start a media company?
Yeah, it's funny. I never set out to be an entrepreneur and own my own businesses and build my career like this, but it really felt so natural. So back in 2008, when I started the company, the world was in turmoil, right? We were going through, you know, the financial mess that was that year and the housing crisis, and businesses were closing, and I was a young little pup in the career, in my career of advertising and marketing. And I remember the company that I worked for, the CEO called a national conference call, and he was crying on the phone call, telling us about the status of the business and what was in front of us potentially, and what the type of bankruptcy that they were filing, what it meant and what it meant for us as the employees. And this was all super new to me. I think I was like 26, 27. I was like, what? I think I need to get a new job. I think that the result of this conference call means I need to start looking for a new job. Because it wasn't an immediate, like, you no longer have a job, instead of freaking out, I spent some time just sitting and thinking and trying to figure out what's my dream job. Like, what was that for, you know, for me in that moment? And then trying to then go after that. And during that process, I was engaged to my now husband, and we were having a conversation. He literally, it feels like still to this day, like a little whisper in my ear, really in my soul, that was like, hey, why don't you just text a couple of your clients that you have now and see if they'll use you for whatever it is. Like, he didn't even know what I kind of did back then. He was like, whatever you do right now, if they will let you do that for them. And if you think you can make $35,000, like take home like salary for yourself in that first year, then it's worth doing. And not one moment passed where I was like, yes, like that just sounded like a brilliant, fantastic idea that I had to at least try. It sounded so fun. Honestly, I think the number one thing it sounded like was a lot of fun for me. It was in my wheelhouse. What I do remember now as a savvier entrepreneur, I'm doing air quotes for your audience, a savvier entrepreneur, is I didn't have any fear. And that's the thing that I still am amazed by today, because when I tell my story and I talk to other people who either are entrepreneurs or want to be entrepreneurs, there's a big amount of fear, right? In the unknown and what could happen and all of that. And I had none of it. And I just jumped right in. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I didn't know. But that was the spark. That was the very beginning of me being an entrepreneur and starting RLM.
I always think that you have to be fearless when you first start. And you have to go in full throttle. Because I think that if you truly knew what you were going to come across and the hurdles you would have to jump over, I don't know. I don't think I would have. I wonder if I really were to talk to myself and say, this photography thing, are you sure you want to do it?
Ooh, so do you think that, great question.
Would you do it over?
Well, so I was 27. I'm about to be 41 in a couple of weeks. So the idea of starting over at 41 exhausts the hell out of me. But I know that 27-year-old Farisa would do it every single time all over again. Honestly, for me, it's like being Black. If I could like go back into the womb and pick who I was, like pick my race and pick my gender, I would pick being a Black woman over and over again, as hard as it can be, right? Because the rewards are so big, and we know what our superpowers are as Black women, right? So it's the same thing as as this level of creativity and freedom that I get to have as a business owner, yes, I would pick that all over again.
Can you share what some of those rewards are?
Of entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Yes.
I was like, or of being a Black woman.
Oh. Well, I know there are lots of rewards of being a Black woman,
right.
Beautiful skin being one of them.
So the biggest reward, I think, for me is the reward of creation, right? So we get to create the future. And with my team, I kind of talk, I joke that I go to the future, spend time there, and then bring back ways of being, doing, thinking for today. But the reality is that as entrepreneurs and business owners, we get to create the future. I get to sit every day and figure out, what do I want tomorrow to look like, feel like, and be like for my business, for my team, and for our clients, and for me as a human, right? So that's one of the biggest things. I think the next thing is this feeling of accomplishment is not the right word, but it's really about, it's like what it feels like to be a parent sometimes. It's so rewarding to watch something that you have created and in the parent situation giving birth to, where you see this beautiful thing that you're so proud of grow and evolve into different versions of itself. And as it grows, just like parenthood in business, if you're doing it right, become less and less needing of you, right? It becomes more and more independent. It becomes bigger than what you can hold in your hand, and you watch it flourish and grow into something. And for me, that is one of the biggest rewards. I started in my living room sitting on a couch with a laptop, and now I have an office downtown with almost 30 employees, and I really get to steer the ship and not, you know, cook all the meals and be a waitress and do like, I have one job. Well, I have like 3.5 jobs, really. I'm boiling it down to one, but the company, RLM is a she is self-sufficient and doesn't need her mom to take care of her in the same way that she did over these past 13 years. And that's rewarding for me.
I have so many questions as the follow-up to that. I guess the first question I want to ask is, what's been really surprising to you in terms of how you've grown over the last few years, especially as the business has grown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My biggest surprise that I have given myself is my ability to let go and not have to know everything. I grew up feeling, and still sometimes today, feeling like I don't know enough about what's going on around me. I grew up in a very Christian, strict household. We weren't allowed to like listen to secular music or watch certain TV or do certain things that as you grow up, you're like, oh my God, I missed out on a lot of stuff that is like normal pop culture or just knowledge. And so when I realized that, I kind of went overboard and was like, I need to know all the things that I don't know so that I don't make mistakes and I am not in a place of darkness. And so being a business owner is another place where you can feel very much in the dark, no matter if you grew up the way that I did or not, because there's so much you don't know about running and owning and growing a business. But as the years progress, what I realize is that for me to build the business to the point where I want it to be, which is honestly valuable, right? Beyond my definition of valuable as the creator of this thing, but as the business world would define valuable, it was important or necessary that I let go and let this thing grow into something bigger and better than me. So that looks like hiring people that know things that I don't know and letting them be in charge of that. It looks like listening to them when I'm making decisions, right? And not being a dictator and really being a democratic system that I'm asking your opinion, not only because I respect it, but because I need it to make a smart next steps decision. As I do that, and I'm still, I'm doing that more and more every single day as the business grows. And I know that I wouldn't have been able to get to this point without doing that. So when I see myself doing it and I recognize myself doing it or witness myself doing it, I'm like, Look at you, Farisa. I am so proud of you because that wasn't my natural way of showing up in the world.
I'm just digesting. I reckon that I have to be faster with digesting and savoring the responses that come out of my guests and from you in particular. Because one of the things that I realized when I came into the world of photography, I did 13 years in another sector, particularly in the field of education policy and in early childhood development. So I always worked in a small office, and I've always had women as bosses, actually, come to think of it. And it's really been interesting to see how an organization is run, in that the leader, basically, they're trying to maintain the direction of where the ship is going and make sure that the organization keeps on going towards the true north or whatever it is that the leader has set. My question for you is, how do you determine what that true north is for RLM Media? Because it's changed so much since you first started. It was just you in your living room, as you said, and now you're 30 plus people. And how many iterations has RLM gone through, and how have you been able to maintain that true north?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first time I ever had to ask myself that, I said, I want to build a company that if I were just an employee at it, I would be very proud and happy and excited to work there, right? So beyond what we do for a living, because yeah, we started out as a media buying advertising agency. Beyond the skill set of the people, the person or the people that work there, I wanted myself and everyone else that was to come to be excited to come to work every day. That was my first thing. And I didn't know I was doing that at the time, but I was starting to build the culture of the company, even when it was just me. So that is like the internal true north that has never wavered in one way or another. Now, what it has done is look different, right, over the 13 years, what it actually means to feel happy to come to work. So fast forward 13 years, today, what does it require that all the 30 people who work at RLM feel happy to come to work every day? It's that we continue, when we add people to the team, that they fit the culture of the team that we've created. It looks like me paying attention to the temperature of the world that we live in. And we just lived, 2 years of a pandemic. What was good about us working from home every day for 2 years? What was horrible about it? And what do we miss about the office and seeing each other every day? And how do we create something new that's never existed before instead of trying to go back to the thing that we were doing? And so we created that in our personal hybrid model of how we live our weeks. So yeah, a previous version of RLM, it might've looked like having free beer in the refrigerator on Fridays or Thursdays for everyone to partake. We still do that, but you have to pay attention, right? So how I figure out how to continue the true north is really from paying attention to what's going on in the world and what my team is saying. From a business perspective, it's always just been giving the best quality work that we can, no matter what we're doing. Even as we've evolved from just media to now being a full service integrated marketing, communications, and advertising firm, we do so much more than media. But the number one criteria is we deliver the work that we do at a high quality. And our customers, I want our clients to feel like they don't know what they would do if we weren't in their lives. And not just from a business perspective, but really like a human perspective, really looking forward to talking to us and being in our presence and learning from us. So it's like adding value in a human way on top of what we do for a living. So that's the true north that I've set up, and it takes different faces, depending on where we're at and what we're doing. But how I know which way, if we need to turn left a little bit or right a little bit, is just by paying attention and listening and taking the advice and the thoughts and ideas from the trusted folks that I have around me in leadership at my company.
I love what you said about doing such great work that your clients wouldn't know what they would do without you, because I think that's where it's at, honestly. And I had a friend who is a musician, and she's just really, she loves her craft so much, and her goal is to be one of the greats. And the way that she defines it is that she not only produces work that fulfills her and that allows her to make a living, but that she also does work that inspires other people. So I love that response. I'd love to ask you a question about some of the skills one needs to not only build their own business, but think in much in a bigger way. When you first started, did you assume or did you have dreams that RLM would be what it is now? Probably now you have dreams where RLM can go, but can you talk to me about that vision that you had for yourself and some of the skills that you needed to learn to be able to make sure that that vision is on track?
Yeah, no, it's funny. Like when I first started the business, I had zero idea or thought about where we would be after year one, year five, year eight, year 10. And, you know, now we're in year 14. My only goal back then, honestly, was to make it to the next day. My husband was he was way more business sophisticated than me. And this is, I think, the difference in thought process there. What I've learned over the years is the more you know about business, like actual, again, running and management and growth of business, the more you actually set up those goals at the very beginning. And you start to think about, okay, why am I doing this? What are my goals? Where do I want to take it? And what's my exit strategy? When you're a true sophisticated business person, those are the things that you're asking yourself and you're putting into development at the very early stages. I know that now because I've owned a business for 13 years. But back then, he would say like, oh, you should, you know, partner. And he would like list like the biggest ad firm in the country. And I would be like, what? I need to get past Wednesday. Today's Tuesday, tomorrow's Wednesday, and then there's Thursday. You know, like I couldn't see past what was in front of me at the moment. It does require, though, that kind of focused mentality in the beginning to not be dreaming about where you'll be in 10 years, because you have to get past that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday before you can be in year 10, right? So I shut it out. And then as things started to develop, I started to see a vision for it beyond how much money can we make this year so that I can afford to pay all the employees and pay the rent and all of that. And then as I became more business savvy and understood why people are actually creating businesses in the first place, you know, there's a small handful of people, a lot are either women or Black people or just people of color. We're creating businesses traditionally for lifestyle. It's either out of necessity, right? Of, well, it's easier if I'm a woman and I'm a mother, if I just do something sort of like a solopreneur and work that way. But you're not creating that business in the goal of creating value, selling it one day for millions of dollars and moving on to your next thing. You're creating that business so that your family and your life can flow in an easy way and you can make some income for your family. That is the majority of Black-owned, women-owned, people of color-owned businesses. When you start looking at all the wealth in business ownership, the reason why they are creating business is so that they can sell it. That's really they're not creating businesses so that they have, you know, free time whenever they want it, or can be their own boss, or can say they're the CEO of something. No, they're creating these businesses so that they can build it to a point that it makes enough money that they can go sell it for millions of dollars. And that's it. And sometimes if you remove the heart from it, you can feel that, right? But what I know now is that you can have heart, like you can have a true humanness to your approach, but still have the agenda of building value and being valuable and one day actually earning the same money that I must just say it, a mediocre white guy who's doing what I'm doing can make, right? And so I am not a mediocre white guy. I'm an extraordinary Black woman. And so I want to be paid like an extraordinary Black woman.
Huh, I think we could end here. Oh my gosh. I don't know what I can say to that. That was amazing. I think I'm going to have to listen to that again. And I think everybody else, I think you should press rewind and listen to that again. It's so true. I think in a lot of ways you can tell when a company or when you have interactions with people who are just having transactional interactions and those who really care. And you can tell when a business really cares and when they don't. It's very obvious. I think we humans have a great way.
Yeah, we can smell BS. Who's
there to create value.
We can smell BS when there's BS. And I think that, you know, even you're going to be more successful if you actually treat people like human beings, no matter if you're, you know, building a valuable business or not. And so I think that's one thing that I, you know, we're natural at, you know, and these are some stereotypes, but ones that I feel like most people would nod their heads at. Women, we're nurturing, right? Black women, we know who we are. We're very confident. You add that together, and then you add the business mindset on top of that, and then you have something really powerful that can't be duplicated by anybody else. So that's really, you know, my goal to your friend you mentioned earlier, is also to be known as one of the best at things that I do. But for me, the best means all three of those things, not just making a lot of money, but people, the humans that I touch along the way, saying it was a pleasure being in contact with her, right? And that the people who work with me or around me feel some sort of personal value. It's not like I'm just getting something from them. They are also getting something from me in the process.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Taking notes, that's why I was so quiet. I think those three are so true, because sometimes it doesn't seem worthwhile to do work when it's not fulfilling. And not to say that all work has to be fulfilling, but I think I've been on set with some clients when I've realized that I'm not having fun at all. And it's a lot better when you are working with people with whom you can work hard, have fun, as well as feel that there is a sense of connection going on. Well, I'd love to close out by asking you my favorite question, which is about failure. I think that in the US, we tend to focus a lot on successes and on how we overcame. But I think that there's a lot to be learned from when things don't go as expected, or when we fall, or when we stumble. Can you share an instance where things didn't go as you plan, or you made a mistake, or you failed, you know, whatever, however you want to describe it? And did you learn anything from that instance? And is there anything that you used so that you could be just a better Farisa?
Yeah, no, there's two major areas where I can say I have tripped up and made mistakes in my journey of entrepreneurship that I have learned from and recovered from, thankfully, and never forget those lessons. One is just how you spend money and just how you think about money in general, right? So at my ad agency, you know, we've never had like an investor or anything like that. All of the money that has gone into the firm has been either from loans or lines of credit from a bank. That's a hard way to build a business. But, you know, other people can have investors write checks for millions of dollars or have family and friends give them money. That wasn't my situation. But not knowing that businesses or banks, I should say, don't want to give money to businesses who look like they need money was a hard lesson for me to learn. And I didn't know that until one year we needed some money to stay afloat. And I went and did the process, and they were like, no, because it doesn't show that you will have the clients or the resources to pay the funds. So we navigated through that first year, honestly, with personal funds. At that time, you know, we had just gotten married and had enough to invest back into the company. Obama just released a stimulus and all that. So that our first loan ever, I still, if I ever meet Obama one day, I'm going to be like, I am a successful business owner because you were able to pass the stimulus and I got $50,000 to put into the business. And it was a lifesaver. But the lesson I took from that was, after great years, years where RLM did fantastic and it was our biggest years ever, I went to the bank as soon as that year closed out and I was like, I would like a line of credit. I would like a loan. Look at the performance of the company. Here's how I plan on doing that again next year. And I would get it. I would get hundreds of thousands of dollars. And what that would do is set me up for when things might not be as great, right? Because that's really how businesses are run. There's no business hardly on this planet that's successful, whether they're doing $1 million or $20 billion. That's just being run off of the money that they generate from their customers. It's not happening. So that was a lesson I had to learn the hard way. And I call it a failure of sorts because it's something that I had to learn hard and that we had to recover from. And honestly, in some ways, RLM is still recovering from me not knowing that and spending money in a way that didn't positively help that and affect that. Even in investing in my other company, you know, I have a production company and between my household, RLM, even my husband's business, we've invested money in the production company that we thought it was going to be this. Like I thought I was going to build the next Refinery 29 for modern women of color. It didn't turn into that because the market didn't call for it. And I didn't know how much money it was going to actually take for me to build that. And I didn't have the resources to go raise $4 million. So I couldn't do that. So the money we invested for a certain amount of time looked like it was just a busted investment. Until I took the moment to just sit down and think about, okay, what is still valuable about this company? And how do I hold on to that and get rid of everything else that's not valuable? And honestly, in that exercise is how I figured out I'm a producer. I didn't know that. I was like, oh, wait a second. I've created this video for this, you know, fashion campaign. I had at that time already created both seasons of PR Girl, the reality show that I have now on Amazon. I had done so many things and it never had dawned on me that I was a producer. Like that's what my natural skill set was. And then eventually going into creator, like I now can create TV shows, whether scripted or unscripted. And it was in that what I thought was a severe loss and like, ugh, I just like spent and wasted all of this money building this other business while I was like I started the second business before I had the kids. And I thought, oh, look, I just started one business. I can do it again. And I was like, what was wrong with me? What was I doing? I spent all this money and I have nothing to show for it. And that's when I was like, no, Farisa, you're a creator and you're a producer. Focus on that. And during COVID, that was like 2 years before COVID. Then during COVID, I really was able to sit with myself and create in and for that company. And what it resulted in is what we have as our first scripted TV show concept that hopefully we'll be pitching before this year is up. To networks. So, and it's based off my book, the memoir that you mentioned earlier. So it's a really exciting space to be where it's like that big mistake that quite honestly, advisors I had at the time were like, kill that company. It's a drain on your personal finances. It's a drain on your successful business. Kill it. And I was like, again, back to the kids. I'm like, kill it. I can't kill one of my children. I have to just teach and mold it and nurture it to a place that it's no longer a drain where it can start generating results. So those were the two biggest lessons so far. Thankfully, I didn't have to learn the third lesson the hard way, which is that letting go piece. That was like, because that would have, if I did not do that, that would have resulted in just as big of a iceberg crash as those other two things did.
Those are valuable lessons to learn. And it looks like you grew in the process as well, in terms of discovering a side of yourself that was always there, but you weren't shining a light on. So that I'm kind of pleased.
You learn it's okay not to be perfect too. I think, you know, that's another thing I used to struggle with, where I had to show up perfect all the time. I had to make all the perfect decisions. I had to make my employees think I was perfect, but there is no such thing. And I think the more comfortable we get with being uncomfortable is really where the magic happens.
Mm. Oh yes, it's so true, because we come out of the chrysalis when we do get really uncomfortable, because then, you know, we shed one layer and then we become something else. I think it's so true. Mm-hmm. Well, Farisa, thank you so much for joining me. I loved our conversation. I learned so much. I can't wait to edit this episode, because I know I'll be taking notes just like I took notes while you were chatting. This has been such a treat. Thank you so much.
Thank you.